We're talking with Stephen Zunis, who is a professor at University of San Francisco, an expert on foreign policy, particularly in the Middle East. We've talked to Stephen a number of times over the years about unfortunate various incursions by the United States. Today we're going to be talking about the situation in northern Syria, where the United States, you know, redeployed its troops in order to give a green light to the Turkish government to invade and to occupy that territory. So, you know, Stephen, what is some of the story about that situation that perhaps we're not getting from the mainstream media?
Well, a number of things. I think, first of all, that the issue is not just a matter of troops should remain in Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East to protect vulnerable populations, you know, versus Trump was right to abandon the Kurds in such an irresponsible and precipitous manner and allow the Turks to invade Syria. The fact is that U.S. forces in Syria were not there to protect the Kurds. They were sent there to fight ISIS. They allied with the Kurds because they were virtually the only armed force in that part of the world that had a popular base. Ironically, given the U.S. support, they are a leftist organization. They've been running a quasi-democratic socialist system with women in leadership, with secular principles and minority representation and the like. And indeed, one reason Trump may have wanted to see the Turks destroy them is that they were a threat of a good example. At the same time, I think that there are some serious the criticisms of the way there are legitimate criticisms. I'm sorry about the presence of U.S. forces in Turkey. It's a pretty bad precedent to bring our troops into a country where they are not wanted by the recognized government, where we were keeping them there according to administration spokespeople for some time as a counter to the Russian and Iranian presence elsewhere in Iran. And though I personally oppose the Iranian and Russian presence as well, they've enabled Assad to engage in some pretty horrific repression. That this idea the U.S. can somehow have troops, send troops anywhere in the world because we don't like the allies of a given government, is a pretty bad precedent, especially when Congress never authorized the deployment of U.S. forces, and the risk of an accidental or deliberate exchange of fire with Iranian or Russian forces, of course, could expand into a much broader war. What I've been advocating for some time now is that the U.S. pull its forces out of Syria, but in a manner that allowed for some guarantees of the continued autonomy of the Kurdish-run areas, including a very clear signal to Turkey that if they crossed one inch over that border, the U.S., along with our allies, would impose crippling sanctions, including eliminating all military assistance and strategic cooperation. What we've seen instead is that Trump has ended the very limited sanctions that he imposed in response to the Turkish invasion, and brokered a supposed agreement that the Kurds really were not involved in, that have allowed Turkey to occupy a 30-kilometer swath of northern Syria along the border, where they've been engaging in ethnic cleansing, extrajudicial killings, bombing of civilians, and all sorts of horrific actions. And rather than bring the troops home, as Trump implied, and ending these endless overseas wars, as he claimed he was trying to do, he has simply redeployed them to nearby areas in Iraq and elsewhere. He's actually been increasing the number of troops to the Middle East, including sending thousands to Saudi Arabia. And that says a lot about Trump's foreign policy right there. He's unwilling to leave a few hundred troops to protect a democratic, socialist, autonomous region, but he's willing to send many thousands to protect a totalitarian, misogynist family dictatorship. And when, particularly ironic, given that Saudi Arabia doesn't need U.S. forces. They are many times more powerful than Iran. They have six times the annual military spending that Iran does. I mean, it really is indicative of the Trump's authoritarian impulse.
Let's see if I can get a second question in here. I was reading an article you had in Truthout. A couple of points you made is one is that the Kurds are the largest, nation without its own country, spread out over six other countries, particularly Turkey and Iraq. But also you had articulated this history of the United States using the Kurds to, you know, help in various wars over the years and then abandon them, you know, when it was no longer in the United States' interest to support them.
Oh, sure.
Them.
You can go back to the 1970s when the United States, through the Shah of Iran, armed Iraqi Kurds to fight the then leftist government in Baghdad, and following an agreement between Iran and Iraq that was favorable to the U.S. ally, the Shah, the U.S. suddenly cut off their supply lines, and many thousands of Kurds were slaughtered. Henry Kissinger, when asked about it, he said, foreign policy is not missionary work. We can look at how in the 1980s, when the U.S. was siding with Saddam Hussein against the Iranians in the Iran-Iraq war, we covered up for massacres, which included the destruction of over 4,500 Kurdish villages and the killings of close to 100,000 Kurds, including the use of chemical weapons on Halabja and other Kurdish cities. The U.S. covered up for it, falsely claiming Iran was responsible for the chemical weapons attacks, and blocking the senior President Bush blocked Congress from efforts to put sanctions on Iraq for its war crimes. We saw President Clinton in the 1990s actively support Turkish suppression, where over 3,000 Kurdish villages were destroyed. Again, tens of thousands of Kurdish civilians were killed. And he Clinton is virtually the only world leader to support Turkey when they made a series of cross-border raids into the Kurdish areas of Iraq, which we used as when Saddam did it, or even threatened to do it, we used it as an excuse to bomb Iraq for violating the so-called no-fly zones. When our ally Turkey did it, we were fully supportive. And you can look at the Gulf War when the senior President Bush encouraged the uprising for the Kurds following the defeat of Saddam in the Gulf War, only to again abandon them, allow Saddam to bring in helicopter gunships, again massacring thousands, after we encouraged them to rise up. The Kurds have been used as political pawns, not just by the United States, but by other regional powers as well. But the U.S. record is particularly sordid, and it's another reminder that Trump's actions, as despicable as they may be, are not the first time we have abandoned Kurds to the slaughter.
We've been talking with Stephen Zunez, and this is Mark Dunley with Hudson Mohawk Independent. Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. Now, one question I have is, Russia has said, okay, we're going to step in and we're going to act as a barrier between Turkey and the Kurds and then Syria. Does Russia actually have any interest in helping the Kurds? Is this more trying to ensure that, Syria doesn't lose total control over that area?
This is not a humanitarian gesture. Russia, like the French and the British, over the centuries has vied for power and influence in that part of the world. The United States became a major player after World War II. This is all part of the great game, if you will. I mean, I'm a little nervous about, you know, people who are trying to make this kind of new Cold War narrative that, oh, you know, Trump is, you know, letting the Russians come in to take over our sphere of influence or whatever. But I mean, the fact is that neither the United States nor Russia nor anybody else, you know, has a right to determine, you know, the future of that part of the world. But at the same time, the Russians, you know, have, you know, been supporting the Assad regime and some of its worst atrocities. I mean, the YPG, the Kurdish group that the U.S. supported, you know, fighting ISIS and had brought in this semi-democratic structure over there. I mean, they were originally formed to fight Assad because he was denying, you know, like the Iraqis earlier in history and like the Turks, you know, periodically were denying the Kurds their cultural and political rights. And but at this point, I think the Kurds, you know, figure that Assad might be the and the Russians may be the lesser evil compared to the Turks, given their history of genocidal wars against them.
I have sort of a two-part question. You know, one is, you know, do the Kurds have any realistic chance moving forward of getting their own you know, country at this point? And second, certainly one of the things that's been raised in the American media is that the invasion by Turkey may result in the, you know, release of various combatants from ISIS. And does that really, you know, increase the possibility that ISIS will reemerge as a military force?
Well, when you're an armed force in a hasty retreat from an incoming army, organizing the safe evacuation of POWs is not your highest priority. So, indeed, there have been ISIS fighters and ISIS supporters that are free now, and that's certainly a concern. I don't see them being able to rebuild the caliphate that they had established in northern Iraq for a time, but certainly, there are more of these, you know, very, very dangerous extremists on the loose right now as a result of Trump's actions. Regarding the question of Kurdish independence, I mean, almost every Kurd still dreams of having independent Kurdistan. There are hopes for that at the end of the Ottoman Empire. In fact, President Woodrow Wilson supported that idea, but he was outvoted by the British and French, who were more into their classic divide and rule tactics. The Iraqi Kurds, you know, still hope for an independent state. That's part of their program. But for now, they are satisfied with having a de facto independent state, not a very autonomous region within the internationally recognized borders of Iraq. The Syrian and Turkish Kurds have shifted away from the demand for independence, more for autonomy and cultural and political rights. And have largely given up on actually having an independent nation state. But given Turkey's actions, you know, that is looking less and less likely. I mean, what the Turks seem to be wanting to do in this occupied part of Syria, in many ways, is parallel to what Israel did in southern Lebanon between 1978 and 2000, setting up a so-called buffer zone, which is basically a nice word for a brutal military occupation. And it's interesting how that occupation in southern Lebanon, ostensibly to keep the Palestine Liberation Organization and its fighters away from the border, it ended up directly contributing to the rise of Hezbollah, which has ended up being a much more radical and extremist challenge to Israel and other parties in that part of the world. And the fear is that by the U.S. supporting yet another such buffer zone occupation, that it may encourage some more extremist Turkish groups, because the PKK, which was the Turkish Kurdish group, indeed engaged in terrorism back in the 80s and 90s, and they cleaned up their act. Become a lot more moderate in recent years, but they and their YPG, which is closely affiliated with them, being treated this way, it could indeed sow the seeds of more extremism in the future. Another chilling scenario is that Erdogan, the authoritarian Turkish leader that and Trump gave the green light to invade after a single phone call and not consulting with anybody on the ground or even any U.S. military, diplomatic, or intelligence officials. Erdogan's been openly talking about moving some of the 2.5 million Syrian Arab refugees living in Turkey to populate this Turkish-occupied section of northern Syria, which they are ethnically cleansing, and therefore exacerbating the longstanding Arab-Kurdish conflicts. And so all in all, this indeed is a tragic situation. And again, progressives don't need to, to fall into the more simplistic, pro-interventionist, sentiments to recognize that a great injustice has been done and that Trump's policies are indeed extremely dangerous.
So I'll end with sort of a final question. Now, you also feel free to answer any question I should have asked. But what's the future for Syria? Are they ever going to be able to establish a more stable country at this point?
Well, the tragedy of Syria is that the initial revolution was a nonviolent one, a broad-based one, an indigenous one, a largely progressive and democratic one. But Assad's repression was so severe, after 6 months or so, a number of Syrians started to take up arms. And you saw some of the reactionary Gulf states start to encourage hardline Sunni Islamist groups that ended up becoming the most powerful force within the armed resistance. The nonviolent movement was largely crushed, caught between the repression of the regime and the armed extremist groups. The U.S. for a time tried to support some of the more moderate armed Syrians, but they never got very far. Many of them, in fact, emerged and were collaborating with the Islamist. And so the most Syrians who don't want the regime or the Islamist were stuck in the middle. And over half the Syrian population has been displaced, either internally or as refugees outside of the borders. And I have personally opposed U.S. military intervention in Syria, I think it's important to recognize that, unlike some narratives that we've been hearing on some segments of the left, the revolution was not a U.S. creation. The U.S. is not responsible for the horror of Syria. I think we've made things worse instead of better, but they would have been pretty horrible regardless. And we shouldn't embrace a kind of a rigid anti-imperialist analysis that says, Saddam's a moderate democratic leader and the U.S. is just engaged in regime change. That's totally false. But to also reject this kind of supposed liberal humanitarian intervention and narrative, which I believe makes things even worse, are what we should be doing with supporting the people of Syria themselves who need to build some form of civil society over the long term, which I think can finally bring change to that country. But it's going to be many, many years away. The war is dying down. Assad is extending his control. There are a few autonomous pockets where there was hope of an alternative, and particularly in the Kurdish areas. But again, thanks to Erdogan and Trump, that's at least partially been destroyed. But I think what's critical is that the fighting and killing needs to end, and the slow process of rebuilding civil society and challenging and to challenge both the regime and some of the reactionary currents in the opposition.
So this has been Mark Dunley, Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. We've been talking with Stephen Zunes, a professor at San Francisco University. If people want to follow you on Truth Out or see some of your other write-ins, what's the best way to do that?
Yes, you can also go straight to my website, which is www.stephenzunes.org. That's Stephen Zunes, one word, STEPHENZUNES.